Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another segment of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. We are back, y'all, in regular rotation every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. We will be covering this election season as we did last time, letting you know everything you need to know about voting schedules, the new absentee voting laws, the candidates, and the races. But tonight, we're talking about what appears to be the most talked about race, the race for Tarrant County Judge. Judge B. Glenn Whitley will not be seeking re-election after four terms in office, and there are several people wanting to take that position. The Tarrant County Judge is the chief elected officer and presides over the Tarrant County Commissioner's Court. This office oversees nearly 2 million residents, as well as provides leadership on issues related to policy and county services for the 15th largest county in the United States. The Tarrant County Judge will have to be a leader on a wide range of issues, including transportation, efficient government, sustainable communities, higher education, youth and children issues, and support for veterans and military families. The judge also serves as the head of emergency management for the county. The primary election for Tarrant County Judge will be held March 1st, 2021. If no candidate wins by more than 50% of the vote, The runoff will be on Tuesday, May 24th, 2022. Tonight, y'all, we're talking to several people, or we were talking to several people, I should say, about this position. One of the candidates called me today at right at 5 o'clock and said that there had been scheduling issues. They said that they thought their event for tonight was from 6 to 8, but in fact it was from 7 to 9. They wanted me to interview them off air and then play the recording tonight, and I was not willing to do that. We are a live show, and that's just not how we do it. So Tim O'Hare will not be with us tonight. But who we do have on the line tonight is Mr. Marvin Sutton, who's a Democrat in the race, and Mr. Trevor Booker. I'm going to open their phone lines now. Good evening, Mr. Sutton, and good evening, Mr. Booker. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good evening, and thanks for the opportunity to share my thoughts and experience with your audience. It's a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you all. Well, do me a favor. Take the next 3 minutes, if each of you all would, and tell us a little bit about you and why you all decided to run in this race. Mr. Sutton, we'll start with you.
Well, thank you. And I'm Marvin Sutton. I'm a former council member from the city of Arlington. I served in the United States Air Force 8 years honorably. I secured nuclear weapons. Then later became an air traffic controller, where I spent 30 years serving the DFW terminal area. I'm one of the few air traffic controllers that worked during 9/11, where we were tasked with recovering over 4,000 airplanes in less than 4 hours. That effort has never been duplicated anywhere in the world. Also, served as presiding election judge in Southeast Tarrant County for more than 20 years. I've been a voter deputy registrar for more than 20 years as well. I'm a community activist. I value our community, and I believe in giving back to the community. I hold a degree in accounting with honors from both Tarrant County College and UTA. And I believe that if we can unite our community, that is the best asset that a community can have. Now, Tarrant County, as you say, is the 15th largest, but it's also the third largest in Texas, as well as the fifth most diverse county in Texas and the 29th most diverse county in the country. So I value that diversity. We're going to work to unite the community. And most of all, I want to build trust in our community. I think it's really important that we bring people together, but build that trust and reconnect our communities. So I really appreciate the time to give an introduction, and thank you, and I look forward to expressing more of my opinions and values as we proceed with the show.
Wonderful. Thank you. Mr. Booker, same question.
Well, pretty much God brought me to this, you know, after, you know, a whole year and currently now fighting the Tarrant County Commissioner's Court and the ISDs, you know, particularly Arlington, Fort Worth, Crowley, Keller. I've been all around them, you know, fighting with them alongside the people. And so, you know, after a whole year of fighting all that, you know, in December, you know, I was just having a hard time sleeping, you know, and when you work in corrections, which I have 10 years in to kind of get my background, you know, three 12-hour shifts of 2 hours of sleep, you know, is not going to work, you know. So my spirit discernment, how it works is I get uncomfortably hot. So ultimately, you know, I said, all right, Lord, what is it you're talking to me, what you need? And, you know, he said, I want you to run. Well, with me, you have to be specific. Yeah, you know, it's like run around the house, around the in place, around the block, you know, and he's like, I want you to run for the position you're fighting for. And I'm like, Tarrant County Judge? And he said, yeah. I mean, ultimately, I said, no, thank you, you know, because I'd rather, you know, fight with the people alongside them, fight the podium, you know, tell the truth, tell the Constitution, and then, you know, go back and get a game plan with the people. Well, ultimately, you see, I lost that battle. So, you know, this is all God ordering my steps. And moving forward, my background is 10 years in corrections. I have 6.5 years working with TDCJ in the adult. Then the rest of it is in the juvenile and in the local municipality. My degree I have is associate in counseling. I've worked 6 months at a rehab that was juveniles and adults in the same. I serve soup kitchens, and I've done, you know, many of countless hours of campaigning for grassroots candidates. And so, you know, here I am now. I'm answering the call that God brought me to, and you know, I want to serve as the conservative one. We need to get back to fiscal responsibility type issues with this, with the county judge position. There's too much backdoor deals that's been going on. We're overtaxed. We're, you know, overcontracted. There's a lot of issues with our budget right now that, you know, it's just insane, you know, and that goes from a lot of what my key points are.
Okay. And I forgot to mention, y'all, the qualifications for the qualifications that are needed to be a Tarrant County judge. First of all, you have to be a U.S. resident, a resident of Texas at least 12 consecutive months, a resident of the county for at least 6 months, registered to vote in the county, at least 18 years of age, not have been finally convicted of a felony from which you have not been pardoned or otherwise released from the resulting disability, not have been determined by the court with probate jurisdiction to be totally mentally incapacitated or partially mentally incapacitated without the right to vote. So basically, the candidate for this office generally must meet the above qualifications at the time of filing. That's it. So I was very surprised when I discovered that's what the qualifications were. So if you didn't know, now you know. And I also found out that this job pays very well. I understand that this job pays $198,000 a year plus a $5,500 bonus and a $15,000 per diem allowance for gas, travel, and phone usage. Nice job, y'all. So, Mr.
Yes,
Sutton and Mr. Booker, I don't blame y'all for applying for this job because it sounds like a great job to have. That said, do you all feel like the bar is set too low for a job that has so many responsibilities? And I'm going to get into a lot of the responsibilities in a minute for this job. But do you feel like the qualifications for this job, the bar is set too low? Mr. Sage.
Is that for me, Marvin?
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
Well, you know, I think an opportunity to serve in a capacity is always a value to your community.
Mm-hmm.
I think the more restrictions you put on it, the less opportunities for people to serve. I think it's important that we all serve.
Mm-hmm.
It's a higher calling, I believe. Now,
mm-hmm.
you mentioned the money. I served on Arlington City Council where my salary was $200 a month, and
mm-hmm.
that's what I was receiving, serving in that capacity. So it's not the money that draws me to the position. It's the
mm-hmm.
service, being able to serve others. And the
wow.
salary I received from the city of Arlington, I used to donate to Title I schools, to buy clothes for needy families from Mission Arlington. So the money that I do receive once elected to that office, I would donate that money to organizations that would provide valuable service to our community. I think anytime someone wants to serve in any capacity, they should be afforded that opportunity. I think we have to open those access and opportunity for individuals to serve. I mean, you're talking about 2.1 million population, and there's
mm-hmm.
a lot of work to go around. And we talked a little about the diverse communities, and I think
mm-hmm.
we should tap into that diversity and give people an opportunity to serve. But I'm looking at an opportunity to serve, not the compensation. And so my goal and my heart, my desires, is to elevate the experience you have with me as an elected official. And that's why I give my cell phone numbers out publicly, because I want you to feel connected with Marvin Sutton, the individual. But I also value your opinion as a voter, as an
mm-hmm.
individual, as a stakeholder.
Mm-hmm.
And moving forward, I think it's important that a local official connects with the community it serves.
Did I understand you to say that if elected, you would give your salary away?
I would give the salary to needy organizations, schools, individuals in need. I'm retired. I've been retired for 3 years. And so the ability for me to serve and the retirement, I wouldn't need the compensation to survive. You know, most people do need that compensation because you're giving up a full-time job. But in my case, I don't need it. and I'll be wow. willing to donate that salary to organizations that can use it and benefit our community.
Wow. That's amazing. Mr. Booker, what are your thoughts?
I think the pay and the bar is way too high. I mean, honestly, you know, especially with what we have gotten from Whitley in the last 11 years. I mean, we have had seen a tax raise in what at that time it was 3 times, but now it's 4 times. You know, the tax rate has been raised under his leadership. And, you know, and then in the same time, you want to give yourself a raise in the middle of a pandemic, you know, which the only one person that voted against it was Devin Allen. And so, you know, I had to, you know, I got to give her props because I agreed with that. You know, I don't think this is the right time for them to give themselves a raise. I mean, they were making Whitley was making $195,000 at the time before the raise. And then the commissioners were making $185,000, I believe, at the time. So, I mean, like, really, I mean, I've never made over $35,000 a year, so I wouldn't know what to do with the $198,000. But I know, like Mr. Sutton, you know, I mean, honestly, donate it, or I'm going to help where I can. You know, I mean, there's a need, you know, especially in the South Side. The South Side has a 94% crime rate, so, you know, there has to be something that we can do in that neighborhood or in that areas where we can drive that down. I mean, even north side of Fort Worth and North Beach Street and into Keller is having issues too. So we need to, you know, leaders need to be seen down there more, you know, and that's something that I really believe that, you know, that we need to focus on. And yes, there is a lot of needy folks, you know, and I mean, when I canvassed the Mays area over there on the Hemp Hill side, I was shocked and astounded to see how many people were living in one house. You know, when I knocked on one door and handed out a flyer for Hemp Hill Nosa Vende, you know, which is an organization down there, I was shocked to see 3 beds in a living room and 2 beds in the back bedroom, which you could see just from the door's outside. And that hurt me because people should not be living like this. And in such an impoverished neighborhood, it blew my mind. I mean, it's not something that I'm not unfamiliar with, but mm-hmm. where we're at in these times, it should never be like that. So, I mean, like Mr. Sutton, I mean, honestly, I'll probably give majority of it away. I mean, you could pay me $29,000 a year like Maddie Parker makes, and I would do the job just as good.
Wow. You know, you spoke of Judge Whitley. Judge Whitley took office in 2007. Basically, he has had 4 terms and has been in office for 15 years. Do you all believe in term limits for these elected offices? Mr. Booker.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I mean, I'm not here to be a career politician. I mean, I'm there to clean up the books, get the finances back right, get the budget back right, get the contracts handled, because we're just giving them out like we have this money and then want to turn around and ask for a bond. You know, we get a road transportation bridge bond. We get that tax-free, at least on the front end, you know, because everything is always on the front end, but you don't see what happens on the back end. But then you ask for a $400 million bond, and 56% of it you want to use for roads, bridges, and transportation. But then you turn back around and ask what I call the shadow government, the North Central Texas Council of Government. You ask them for more help to help with the financial part of it. First of all, I did the research inside the North Central Texas Council of Government. That's where a lot of our backdoor deals are happening, where our federal fundings are going there. Well, why do we have a public accounting office? Why do we have comptrollers that are paid to handle that kind of money? So why are we giving it to them and shuffling it through areas that aren't even North Texas? I mean, there's a lot of representation there all the way to Waco, which is insane to me. You know, and I'm originally from East Texas down there in Athens, where I'm originally born. So, I mean, that's beyond me to why we're spreading this so thin, but then asking for help, but then we're getting taxed for the help that Whitley has asked. I mean, you know, Whitley just approved a $1 billion collateral selling, and the collateral that was sold, it's right now we're sitting at $1.62 billion worth of collateral sold, and that's the very ground we live and breathe and walk on. That's our house land. That is our business land. I mean, that's sold off to the New York Federal Reserve, and that is the last place I want to be, you know, owed anything to. And that just tells you how broke we are. So we have a long way to go to get that paid off as quick as possible, because there's a lot of people that are tied to the New York Federal Reserve that we don't want no part of. And so we have to go and get real fiscal responsible. So we can't just say yes, yes, yes to every daggum contract and then wonder why we're hurting.
Okay, I'm sorry. That one blew right by me. I mean, Judge Willie just did what type of contract? Because I did a lot of research today, y'all, but I didn't catch that one. He did what?
He sold off $1 billion worth of our collateral. He already sold off $620 million prior to Tuesday. And then Tuesday they approved not just him, but it takes the commissioners as a whole. They just approved a selling of $1 billion worth of our collateral.
Wow.
And that hurts. That hurts. Because it's like every collateral that you sell off, it's 2 to 4%. The highest percentage I've seen is 4, and that's incredibly insane, you know, for breaking it down by numbers, because each collateral we sell, it has a percentage attached to it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Mr. Seiden, wow. First question, I'm sorry.
Did you want me to address the term limits question?
Yes. And then address this $1 billion worth of collateral that was sold off.
Okay. So term limits, I do believe in term limits. Matter of fact, I pushed a ballot measure with a couple other groups in Arlington, which is real term limits. We were successful in pushing that term limits, which requires anybody that served more than 12 years on Arlington City Council to vacate the seat. And that opened up opportunities for other individuals to run who would love to serve in the city of Arlington. So we're successful in that. And in that endeavor, we end up with 3 African-Americans serving at the same time in the city of Arlington. And so the term limits is a good thing. I think it opened the doors for new ideas. I think once you do become ingrained in that office, it's really difficult to unseat an incumbent. And so term limits allows a fresh start, allows fresh faces and fresh ideas. So I really support term limits because I think it adds value to the decision-making, adds value to governing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Second question, are you aware of the $1 billion worth of collateral that was sold off, and do you agree that it should have happened?
I'm not aware. I'd have to do some research before I – make an opinion on it one way or the other, but let me do some research and get back to you.
Okay. And I agree. It caught me by surprise, so I must admit. Okay, y'all, listen. One thing I did find in research that despite the name Commissioner's Court, it's not a judicial court, but it's a general governing body of the county. Among the major duties of the court is to set the tax rate and adopt the county budget, appoint county officials and hire personnel, fill elective and appointive vacancies, establish voting precincts, appoint precinct judges, and call county fund elections, authorize contracts and payments of all county bills, build and maintain county roads and bridges, build and maintain and improve county facilities, including jails, provide for hospitals, public welfare, and veterans assistance, manage all county facilities, and provide for the data services and archival needs of the county. So there's a lot that goes on in these courts. And so we really need to pay close attention as these elections are coming up, that we understand how much power we're giving to these people that we're electing. So tonight, I hope you listened very closely to the candidates that did take the time to stop by the show and tell us how they feel about the position, explain a little bit about their platforms, whatever they like to share with us. As a matter of fact, can you all elaborate on your platforms? Mr. Sutton, can you tell us a little bit about the platform you're running on?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. So my goal is to lower the tax rate. We can look at how those departments run and make sure they run more efficiently with technology and innovation, which means that that's more income that you take home that you can provide for your family, whether it's food, education, or health care issues. The goal is to make sure you have more of your money and the county can still deliver those quality services but run the departments efficiently. Number two is I want to make sure we're able to expand our public health care network. We're in a pandemic right now, and things are starting to shut down voluntarily. I know the Martin Luther King event has been canceled. And I think it's a wise decision that we do cancel those because of the spread. The governor has asked for federal funding to help us mitigate the spread as well. So we've got to be able to come in and expand our resources. I know in 2018 we pushed a bond, the county pushed a bond measure that was to build more county medical facilities. Those facilities have not come online. Our medical services and facilities locally throughout the 41 municipalities are being challenged and reaching a threshold that we don't want to see. So I do believe we have to, as a county, ensure, because the number one role of any government is public safety, bar none, whether it's federal, state, or local. Public safety is key. And I want to make sure you maintain that integrity of our public safety infrastructures. But I also want to make sure we're able to support our veterans, our seniors, our students, and our families and businesses, and make sure we increase the inclusion, participation, and transparency. As I told you, my background as an air traffic controller, decision-making with real-time data, I've governed a city with a council of over 400,000, and so I understand what governing is. The county commissioner's court is equivalent to a city council, and the only difference is the county commissioner's court can backfill and appoint elected positions. So once the position of, let's say, the sheriff of DA's office is vacant, they can appoint someone to serve into the next election, whereas in a city, you can't do that. And so I want to make sure that we're including people at the table, making the decisions, and the better decisions we're making is when we're including everybody's opinion in that. So I think the three things that I would focus on to make sure we improve our health care network and maintain the integrity of it, make sure we attempt to lower our property taxes so you have more to take home, and make sure we increase our value in inclusion, partnership, and transparency. So once I take the office, I have the skill set to operate that office at the highest level of competency governing a municipality, the highest level of efficiency. I hold a degree in accounting and have passed the CPA exam, and the highest level of efficiency and the highest level of transparency, because serving in the military taught me three important things: duty, honor, and country. And it taught me most of all to be open and transparent as you lead and serve your country. So I do have the skill set, the knowledge, and the abilities to operate the office of day one. And I think it's important that we take the role and the duties seriously of the office.
Wow. Mr. Booker, what platform are you running on?
Running on responsibility, transparency, and election integrity. And, you know, with transparency comes, you know, I'll hit on that first. You know, when unanimously, you know, a good amount of people inside Tarrant County, you know, believe the elections, you know, we have our issues with that. And there, it's been proven, you know, but the fact is like they've had so much legal litigation that it bounds us to what we can and can't do and what we need to expose, you know. So there's certain things that we can't, you know, get into the legalities of, you know, due to the fact the way it was written. And so, you know, if we could get into the software, we would find out exactly what we already know, but that's a whole different type of ballgame. So, you know, since we don't have any faith in our elections, you know, part of that is we have to get rid of Hyder Garcia. That's where it starts. When you hire somebody, you better make sure you do their background soft and hard, you know, whether you have to, you know, run a background check, but you better look on the internet and see if they've had any questionable issues. And Hyder Garcia has had every questionable issue you can ever think of, everywhere he's went. So, you know, here's the problem with that. One of the individuals running against me and for the Republican Party is one of the five people that hired him. It was Tim O'Hare. It was Deborah Peoples. It was Ron Wright, the late Ron Wright, Mary Louise Nichols, and Judge Whitley. So, you know, they have to fall on the sword for that. And then now we then, you know, that's one issue. Then now we have Vinny Taneja, who has zero medical degree, never worked in a hospital, no certifications given us medical protocols. And then on top of that, everything with him is doom and gloom. Nothing's ever, hey, we're on the uprise, we're here and there. See, my son's a heart patient, so he has a baseline, right? So we have a baseline. If we flatline, if we're at a plateau, we can't go any farther, that's our baseline. That's where we have to work into. So to sit here and listen to Vinny every Tuesday say, you know, we're at a flatline, but that's not a good thing. Dude, this is where we're at. And you know it and we know it, but it's all doom and gloom with him. And unfortunately, yes, the pandemic has been politicized, and yes, the virus is real. I know there's a lot of people that around me are like, oh, it's a virus. No, this virus is a real thing, and we have to understand that. That isn't something that we have to acknowledge. But at the same time, you know, we have unalienable rights that are very important that we have to follow. And Governor Abbott, along with Whitley, along with, you know, Betsy Price, who, you know, who was part of the lockdown process, if you don't know your codes, you have no business even talking about, you know, locking down, shutting down, scaling back. Because our 418 code only gives our governor 30 days with a one-time 30-day extension. You know, after that, he has to go to the legislation and ask them to have more time. And you cannot suspend or make any laws or make any mandates or statutes, anything, without the okay from the legislation. That's Texas Constitution 128 and 29, 362, Bill of Rights. There are no disaster declarations shall any and all unalienable rights be infringed upon. And every bit of that was violated. You know, and that's something that we need to know. And our district attorney allowed for this to happen, you know, on that part of it. Now, going to the fiscal responsibility part, we're spending – we took $628 million worth of CARES Act money last year. And then we've taken $618 million this year. So with that comes a cost. If you don't know your 418 code, which is the Texas Disaster Declaration Act of 1975 – what's the 418 code falls under. So 418.063.64.65 and 66, that's five chapters, all say loan repayment, loan repayment, loan repayment. And one chapter specifically talks about a special account, which means you have to put the money on. So everybody inside Tarrant County will fill that as a whole, not as individuals, but as a whole, and then you'll fill it as an individual through your taxes, you know, whether it be property. So this is the position that Governor Abbott and Whitley and Betsy Price has put us in, and even current administrations. You know, Maddie Parker, she keeps going along with it as well. And so, you know, this is a big issue. We're spending $2.2 million on a COVID CARES FEMA camp. Nobody that I know that's ever had COVID or been a spreader or a super spreader has been locked up for it. So that's unnecessary money. And last year we bought an abandoned hotel for $1.1 million. It's supposed to be for COVID quarantine. You're not supposed to put me in a camp and violate my constitution. It's not without a fight, you know, and these are the things that they have just violated and done behind our backs, you know, and you have to attend commissioner's court and watch them every Tuesday. If you can't be there, watch them and see how they move and act. I mean, I could go down the list of things. You know, we're spending $2.9 million on storage room fees. You know what we can do with that? We can take the very businesses that we have that we own, like we have over 120 vacant buildings. We can start scaling back and using those as storage rooms and start saving money there. But somebody's getting a kickback in the storage room, industry. You know, maybe one of the commissioners have a close friend there. And, you know, those things happen, those quid pro quo behind closed doors things that we don't see.
Wow.
And all those that all follows into transparency, fiscal responsibility, you know, and election integrity all work together.
Wow. We're going to talk about COVID in just a second, but listen, if you're on the phone lines and you have a question or a comment, call in tonight at 515-605-9321. The number to call is 515-605-9321. You know, both of you spoke of COVID, and in light of the surge in COVID cases recently, do you believe that another lockdown is coming, and are you for or against that? Mr. Booker, or whoever wants to start.
I'll go ahead and take it. So COVID is real, as Trevor said, and it is real, and it's killing people, and it is hurting families. I don't think we're headed to another lockdown. I think we have to be cautiously and concerned about the effects it have on our community. I would not like to see another shutdown. I don't think it was really productive for our community. It cut the economic stimulus that was going on at the time. We've since kind of recovered. We've had federal funds to help us mitigate. But I think we need to have our leaders step up and encourage people and their family members to do what's right, wear the mask, Some people don't believe in vaccination. That's fine, but don't infect other people. Be responsible, and as a citizen, be considerate of your fellow person. I think it's more common sense than anything. I think the fact that we're so divisive on this issue, it bothers me. I mean, going to school, we're required to get vaccination. We didn't have a divisive issue. And so I believe moving forward, we've got to have leaders step up and make an example or show an example of how we can unite. There's so much division. You need someone to step in and unite our community. And I think that person is a person of integrity, a person who sets the example, a person that who cares. And that's one of the things I want to do is build that trust and reconnect us all as one people moving forward.
I agree. Mr. Booker, do you think another lockdown is coming, and do you support a lockdown?
You know, it's always there. I can't for sure say that there is, but, I mean, you know, in the way the surge is going, you know, there's talk. I mean, with schools already starting to, you know, to do that, like Northwest ISD just did that today. A couple other ISDs just did that inside Keller. A couple of their subsidiary schools and one of the feeder patterns that they have. So, I mean, you know, normally when they start doing that, it kind of like starts rumbling. There's some talks about it, but, you know, there's going to be a lot of pushback because it was not productive, you know, not productive.
Gotcha. You know,
So I do not support it. Sorry, I'm not trying to cut you off. I don't support it. We had a lot of businesses that hurt and will never recover from it. And another one, you know, just would hurt. There's a couple businesses I've talked to, especially in Benbrook, you know, they said, look, we barely made it out of one. A second one would just bury us.
Gotcha.
And as far as the mask goes, you know, I'm all about personal responsibility, wear it or don't wear it. But, you know, I will say this, if you're sick, stay home. Seriously. I mean, this is common sense, and I don't understand that. You know, now as far as the vaccine, you know, if you got religious beliefs on why you don't want to take it, we should honor that. Should be no questions. Medical, honor that, no questions. You know, but the one thing I'm not liking is, and I think Marvin can agree on this, is there's nobody should be discriminated on whether they get 80 hours of COVID pay for being vaccinated or non-vaccinated. I mean, because that just says discrimination all over it, and I'm just not okay with that. And Whitley made it a very big point, and two of the Democrats on the commissioner's court voted against it. And honestly, you know, I congratulate them for it because they felt the same way.
Trevor, I think we have to incentivize protecting our people, and I would rather use a carrot than a stick. The incentive is to try to keep our community healthy, and if we can do that by incentivizing, but I would not want to go down that road where we discriminate against each other. That causes a division, and my goal is to unite our community.
I'm not familiar with this website, but I did read this, so y'all can, you know, if you question this comment, it was posted. It is posted on this website. There's a website, KUT.org. Again, I'm not familiar with it. But concerning the coronavirus, they said that Judge Whitley made a statement, and I quote, trust your physician. Quit reading some of the garbage on social media and the Internet. Everyone needs to get that vaccine. Get the booster as soon as they can get it. As a Tarrant County judge, would you make such a statement basically in many ways that's like giving medical advice and seeing that everybody's body and medical status is different? Do you agree if he did make that statement? Do you agree with the statement? And would you make such a statement yourself?
I think in the context of the statement was he's doing it out of caution. Consult with your physician. Most physicians would tell you get a flu vaccine during the winter months. So I think it's more out of caution. I think I would use the same caution approach. Hey, we've got a pandemic. Consult with your physician. See if the vaccine works for you, if it's appropriate for you. Not to mandate you get the vaccine. So it's helpful that we understand his goal was to encourage people to consult the doctors. So there's a lot of information on the Internet that's inaccurate at times. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we have to consult professionals who are the experts. And so I would feel comfortable having that conversation with my physician And if it's not appropriate for me to get a vaccine, so be it. But I am vaccinated. I do encourage my siblings, my friends, and my neighbors to get vaccinated. If you are uncomfortable getting vaccinated, I would suggest you wear a mask to protect me. But I would never force you to get the vaccination. I would encourage you because I think it's the right thing to do. But only you can make that decision for yourself. And I believe in individual responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Trevor.
This right here, you know, I've had many reads over that article, and we've had a lot of talks about this, you know, in a lot of groups that I'm a part of, you know, mm-hmm. and the one thing that I caught is because I'm an attention to detail person is, he said, consult your physician, right? But
right.
All last year he was all about not consulting your physician, listen to what Vinny says, Vinny knows what's best, Vinny, right? With no freaking medical degree. You know, like if Dr. Colquitt would have went up there, who's the head over the, you know, the COVID response for Tarrant County, I'd be like, okay, you know what, she's coming in with some degree, some firsthand knowledge, and maybe some common sense. Well, you know, Whitley was all about that, but now he tells you go to the physician, but then he turns back around and he's like, you need to get the vaccine now. We're not going to give you 8 hours of COVID pay. And I'm like, wow, you know. Such a flip-flop, you know. Do you know what you're even doing? No, you don't know what you're doing. You're just talking out your butt, unfortunately, and that's what Whitley has done all year long, you know, yeah. And for a good majority of his 11 years, unfortunately, you know. So we kind of got to see who he was, and I don't put the full weight on just Whitley. I mean, you have four other commissioners there, you know, and they all vote, you know, and their vote, you know, is you know, just as important as his. So when you see that, it's like, okay, so nobody questions anything. Nobody says, okay, wait a minute, what about this? When I talk to this doctor, that doctor, I mean, look, if your doctor says get the vaccine, that, you mean, you go back and talk to your family and, you know, y'all make the decision to either take it or not take it because, you know, freedom of choice is what we're built on. But to sit there and flip-flop so much and then make it political, because a lot of people don't know that Whitley's, and I'm going to step on his toes because I don't care. His wife works for a hospital. It used to be the old HEB, and she's ahead of the. She's one of the head people over there, so it's only right that she gets, you know, more of the funding too as well. So there's where his underlining incentive is.
I am learning so much tonight, though, and I thought I'd done all my research, but anyway, I'm learning a lot. You know, this campaign is really tricky, in my opinion, in terms of some of the players that are in the race. We have former Mayor Bessie Price. We have Manny Ramirez, who is the president of the POA. We have the son of J.D. Johnson. We have Trevor Booker. We have Mr. Sutton. We have Tim O'Hare. And I think there's another person for some reason that I'm missing.
I don't know if that's accurate or not. I think one's running for county commissioner, but correct me if I'm wrong.
One of them?
Yeah, Manny Ramirez is running for county commissioner number 4.
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. Okay, so we're going to take him out. But let's talk about Jody Johnson. Jody Johnson is the son of the current county commissioner, J.D. Johnson. And I understand that J.D. Johnson has a war chest that currently has $252,000 in it. And when I say war chest, y'all, I'm referring to campaign donations that have been accumulated over however many years, or I'm not sure how many years it took to get this $252,000. But the issue is that of his $252,873, I believe he's given $250,000 of that to son Jody Johnson to run for his seat. Do you all, I'm sorry, not to run for his seat, but to run for Tarrant County judge. Do you all
think
that...
Well, no, he's running for Commissioner Precinct 4. He's running for Commissioner 4, too, as well, along with Manny Ramirez.
I'm confusing it, y'all. I'm so sorry. But there's
but
so many players who are given to you. Okay, that's what I'm trying to say. He's running for commissioner, his dad's seat. Do you all think it's fair for that money to be transferred like that?
My thoughts on finance reform, So I would be willing to support what's called a green election, where the county set aside a specific amount of funds for each candidate, mm-hmm. and that candidate only allowed to use that funding. That way you don't have special interests controlling the outcome of an election. The election mm-hmm. should be vetted by the people who are being governed. And with that set amount of funding, it teaches you to be creative, innovative, and reaching out to voters, not where one side is heavy-handed with additional funds. So I don't have a problem with him donating the funds. It's mm-hmm. legal. I just would like to see more control over how we do that and make sure that the community has full knowledge of that, the fact that there's no limit of donations. There's no donations limit on the local races, and that has to change. A lot of the elections are determined by outside influence and special interests, and I think the real intent of an election is to be determined by the people who are governing. And so when you have special interests that are dictating what the elected officials do, you don't have that good rapport, and that's why I go back to building trust and reconnecting with our communities.
I agree. Because the question to me becomes, how long has he had the $252,000? And did he just basically hold on to this money knowing that this day would take place? And how is it that he didn't take any of the money and distribute it amongst other Republicans in his party who are running in other races?
Or better yet, why didn't he donate it to charitable organization?
Very true. I would like to know how long he's had the money. I would like to know how long did he have the $250,000. And, you know, it's just a whole lot of questions I have on that. It just seems very peculiar that would be the case. But, yeah. Anyway, that's just something food for thought, y'all. When I saw that, I just thought $250,000 is an awful lot of money. And I really didn't even know that you could make such a large donation one person to another person. I didn't even know that was possible. But
yeah, there's no limits on the donation amount.
Wow. Okay.
At the federal level there are, but not locally, no.
Okay. And so another issue is that he is currently a constable. And according to the rules, I understand that when you're running for an office, that you're supposed to have to surrender the current seat in order to run for the new seat, but he is not doing so. From what I'm understanding, let me get my notes on this because I don't want to get this wrong. Basically, he's the constable in Precinct 4, and the law says that a certain elected official must fully resign while seeking a new office. Jody has chosen to stay on as constable through a holdover status that the county has stated is perfectly acceptable. Now, would they say that it was perfectly acceptable if it was someone else? That's the question. But the Texas Constitution says that constables and several other named elected positions announce their candidacy for a different public office, that the announcement shall constitute an automatic resignation of the office then held. So is this fair?
And if he's violating the Constitution and it's clear in black and white, then it's a clear violation. I mean, there are some loopholes built in to protect the office itself. The office still has mm-hmm. to have the ability to function, mm-hmm. and it serves the public.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the county commissioner's court has the responsibility and can, mm-hmm. With their authority, replace or an appoint someone in that position, and it will continue to function. And that way you have that transparency and you don't have the sleight of hand, so to speak, or finding a loophole to benefit you because you're still holding public office, and the possibility that you may be perceived leveraging the office to advance the campaign.
Absolutely. Because, see, in my opinion, and I don't know Mr. Jody Johnson from a campaign, but I'm just speaking right is right and wrong is wrong, because it seems like to me someone who's holding onto both sides. I've got $250,000 for campaign funds, so I'm running. But at the same time, I'm holding on to my constable seat just in case I don't win. And I don't know that that being that middle of the road is fair. But
well, I don't know Jody, and I'm sure he's a fine constable, and I'm sure he'll do what's right and in the best interest of the office he serves. I would like to see more transparency, and I think it's due to the people he serves, and I think he's in his mind he's doing the right thing.
Okay, in his mind, I like that. I like the way you put that. Okay, we're going to go to the phone lines, 972-987. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good evening. Good evening to your hostess, Carrie, and to your guest. Good evening. Let me be the first to say thank you to gentlemen for your willing to seek a position of service. You all spoke so well to that position. That to me is what I consider myself a servant, and nothing is greater in this life than service, service to others, sacrificing, yourself for the purpose of serving others, I got a couple observations, and then I just have a question, then I'll get back and listen to the show. My first observation, you gentlemen both spoke regarding the salary aspect of this position, and it is a good one. Sounds good. Hey, maybe in the next couple of years, not for the monetary purposes, but because of the qualification Ms. Carrie spoke of, I feel like I can jump in this race next time around, given the person who's serving is not doing what they need to do. That's the only way I jump in. But given a salary of this, I think what you all spoke regarding the money aspect of it is cool and all, what direction you all want to go in. Nobody questions that, you know what I'm saying? But I think more than important, we know money, it's necessary in this society for causing change. But the most important thing that hinders a lot of people's progress and going forward is policies, the policies that are in place, that cripple people's lives and keep people at a certain, a place of living, We know that that's prevalent within the black community. But I'll leave that there. I know both of you are on two separate spectrums of the political arena. I think I'm in the middle. I consider myself independent, so I can glean from both of you. So with that given, I think policies, that'll be my first perspective and changes, some of the policies that are in place. Regarding the COVID, my perspective on COVID, I learned to, like you say, I learned to respect others' ideas about it. My perspective on it, it's whatever. I don't even put no time, effort, or energy into even thinking about it, I think it's a lot of smoke and mirrors, a lot of fear-mongering, and so on and so forth. But I learned to keep a lot of my thoughts to myself because I don't want to – it's something that who have taken to the side of wanting to be vaccinated, this, that, or the other, following, whatever. So out of respect, you try to just keep whatever to yourself. So thank y'all for your observation concerning that. Now, this election, considering all the candidates that's in this, it's looking like the election of last year. Like we're possibly going to have a runoff. We are possibly going to have a runoff. So I'll pose a question. I'm going to pose a question to both of you candidates, two questions to both of you candidates. And then the last thing is okay. My first question would be, don't be politically correct, because we know a lot of people like to be politically correct. Speak from your heart, because you already speaking from your heart, and that's what I love when people speak from their heart, and their convictions. My first question to both of you candidates would be, I'm going to ask both my question, and I'll go back into the queue. First question, considering Bessie Price is one of the candidates in this race, which I don't think she should be, but, hey, she has every right to be, but I don't think she should be. What is your personal perspective regarding her as mayor of Fort Worth, the time that she served as mayor of Fort Worth? And then my last question would be, and what was that last question? It comes to me. Well, I'm not going to hold you all up trying to – if it comes back to me, I'll bring it up. But I'll go back into the queue. But what is your perspective regarding Bessie Price as mayor as Fort Worth? And Thank you. Thank you, Carrie, for allowing me to speak to the guests.
Well,
let me
clarify your question. You said, what is your perspective on Betsy Price as mayor or as running for?
What is your perspective? We know she's no longer mayor, but what is your perspective as far as her tenure as mayor at Fort Worth when she was the mayor? What is your personal perspective for her? Because now she's trying to transition over from mayor to another, you know, position. And I truly think it's about, with me personally, I think with her, it's about more of the salary that comes with it and the power that comes with it and the, you know, the recognition and all that. I don't think she really cares about this position, but I think it's first the money with her and then the power and then all that other, the mother accolades. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you. Would you all like to address Mr. Adrian's question?
Carrie, Marvin. Mm-hmm. It's Marvin. So I don't know Betsy Price that well, and it'd be unfair for me to characterize her in a certain way. Mm-hmm. I know it takes a lot of determination to govern. Governing is not easy. You're not going to please everybody. You're not going to get everything done. There are challenges. So I applaud her for serving as mayor of Fort Worth. I served on Arlington City Council, and I can tell you from personal experience, it's a challenging role. You do it from your heart. Sometimes you do make mistakes and you do come up short. But at the end of the day, I think we all want what's best for our community. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Mr. Booker?
Yes, ma'am. I know Betsy for a good minute, you know, just from hitting the podiums at the city council. And, man, unfortunately, you know, you got to call a spade when a spade is a spade. So, you know, when you look at Panther Island, we endured a lot of years of that, and that falls up under her. And yes, Kay Granger takes some weight on that. Yeah, she does. But Betsy Price, when she's seen that this was a failed boondoggle, is what we call it, you know, it cost us $500 million. I mean, it's a little bit more. It's 500 and some change. But $500 million is what we have to pay for it. That's federal funding, but we have to pay that back. So, you know, when Trump had to shut it down, you know, he said, hey, look, it's not producing. This shouldn't took 15 years for three bridges to be built, and they're done. They're not done, but they're done. You know, they put the railing up on it just so they can have the safety and be in code. Now you got three concrete bridges. Nothing spectacular about it. I mean, you know, and J.D. Granger, which is Kay Granger's son, made money off of this. David Cooks made money off of this, and he just got a raise. So now he's went from making 200 and I believe 95 to now he's making 300,000 a year after making millions off of that project. And then there was nepotism going on inside of there. That falls on Betsy Price. You should have been calling Sharon Wilson, hey, you need to check out this nepotism issue, which is a felony. And then you have the, you know, misappropriation of funds and some embezzlement that was probably in there somewhere. But that's where Sharon Wilson fell. She was aware of it. But, you know, this is under Betsy Price's leadership. And they continue to approve this and approve that and let things slide. So, I mean, you know, that's strike one. Strike two is, you know, for me and some of the other conservatives is, you know, hey, you didn't handle, you know, the pandemic as far as the constitutional side well, and you cared less. And then you even put businesses that on a blacklist, you know, for when people didn't have water or heat, you know, there were certain businesses you put on the blacklist. That's not – I mean, who does that? You know, and that actually happened. There's an article out there about that, but I was actually with one of the – helping out one of the businesses that was on that blacklist that was doing more than what she was doing. And, you know, I mean, where was the people from city council? Not one of them got in their vehicles and came out that had four-wheel drive and helped deliver any water. I went out there and did that. I was doing that making $18 an hour. And I was spending my own money to help out, you know, and bring water and food and taking people, you know, from their houses to, you know, to wherever businesses that were opening. And then here's strike three, and this is a big one, allowing the TABC to come in, and this falls on Whitley too, because he was one of the leading people behind this, to come and target a 51% bar that just trying to make it through the pandemic. Just because he didn't close down, he never sold alcohol, but he stayed open, you know, but he did have he had the protocols, he had the 6 feet, and he followed in the cleaning and all that, but yet he was targeted by Betsy Price, over $30,000 worth of fines.
just to survive, because they were not allowed to get the PPP loan because Whitley made that choice not to allow the bars to have that. So there was a lot of bars that lost out big time, and he's been targeted by the TABC ever since. They had no legality rights to take his license away or try to suspend it. So he's spending thousands of dollars on legal fees, you know, to keep his license. Well, he just lost it here recently because they chose to cancel it instead of, you know, giving, you know, allowing him to keep his license. Well, at any point in time, Wayborn could have stopped that. Whitley could have stopped it, and so could have Betsy Price. But none of them did that. They contributed to it because he refused to shut down. And that was the, you know, the starting of all this. And he's still going through it right now. I mean, that's big. You're hurting the very people inside your county. And I mean, and it goes farther than that. I mean, it goes way deeper. Goldman's a part of the licensing and and certification board. And he told Chris and a bunch of us people, which that's the name of the guy that owns the bar. It's the Rail Club. You know, that's who I'm referencing. Told them that they voted not to. You know, I'm giving y'all some meat right here. This is the meat stuff. This is the down and dirty that a lot of people don't see. That they voted not to freeze bank accounts. That was a lie. I seen the very statements from the bank saying your bank account's being frozen per federal code, this and this, by the TABC. And it was 100 of them that had that happen to them. So, wow. You know, Greg Goldman is a state rep in Tarrant County. No oversight. Nobody's saying, hey, what are you doing? And he's also part of the Sunrise Committee, which what the Sunrise Committee does, if there's committees or there's four-letter organizations that's not producing, they can shut them down. And they should have done this a long time ago to TABC, but here we are. And so, I mean, this is the things that y'all don't see, that some of us that are really ingrained into activism is, you know, when we really fight for the people.
Wow. Y'all, listen, as he said, he's giving us a meet tonight. Well, you know what? There's so many things I could say. I'm going to go back on something Adrian mentioned, though. I think he was speaking of Betsy Price, and I don't want to let this pass by. One of the things that Betsy Price left office, and that was leaving office with a $2.7 billion shortfall in the budget.
Ooh.
And so
yes, ma'am.
Major. Yeah, that's major in terms of, you know, how someone – will handle this new budget. What are the numbers in terms of the budget that will be overseen by the Tarrant County judge? What are the numbers?
Well, before we get into that, let's talk about something else she left, too. She left somebody 4 years ago, and it carried and floated for 4 years. Somebody over one citizen overpaid $18.7 million in taxes, and we had to pay that back. Tell me how one of the best tax assessor collectors we ever had allow that to happen. I've been through dozens of audits. They don't miss a penny. So how did you float that, and why did we have to pay it back?
Good question. Good question. Good question. So tell me the budget. What is the budget for the Tarrant County judge? What kind of budget is he overseeing? Or she? Or
$2 billion.
$2 billion.
$2 billion.
Oh, my. $2 billion. That's a lot of money, y'all. That's a lot of money. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there, y'all, that we're looking at a really big budget that this judge, whoever is elected, will be overseeing. Okay, y'all, I want to talk about something that happened recently. And the other day, we had Khaleesia Lyons come on, and she told us about the redistricting that recently took place of the precinct. The precinct maps for the JPs and the constables. And I think you said something, Mr. Booker, about your platform was running on transparency. Do you feel like the way that was handled was transparent, or do you think there was a lot of secrecy involved in how those maps were drawn? Because I was told, and I hope Ms. Lyons is listening and can call in and elaborate, I was told that pretty much they were drawn along racial and party lines. Do you all agree with that? And if so, what should or could be done to fix it?
Are you talking about the Justice of the Peace redistricting or the precinct redistricting?
The
precinct chair
of
redistricting.
The redistricting for the Justice of the Peace and the constables. It was recently done to the precinct for.
Oh, yeah. Ooh,
yeah, the precinct.
I'll let Marvin speak because I know I got to speak a lot last time, if he wants to speak on it.
Okay, Marvin. Do we lose Marvin? I'm sorry. Let me check his mic. Did we lose you, Marvin? Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, we can hear you.
I am so sorry. I had hit mute by mistake. So that happened on November 9th at one of the county meetings,
mm-hmm.
where, for whatever reason, it wasn't transparent. It wasn't open. There was no chance for citizens to comment on the map. The map was produced. And I guess there was some horse trading in play with the Justice of the Peace.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in some of the constables, but there was some pushback there. And the commissioner's court, two commissioners walked out, but there was a vote cast that counted and that approved the maps. Now, I haven't really taken a good look at the maps, but I will tell you, 10 years ago, I produced a map and took a map to the county commissioner's court. It was vetted. There was public input into the map. They rejected the map, and they want to keep the precincts intact. Well, there was some horse trading, and I think that they were trying to align the maps for self-preservation, to keep what they had and increase the people that would more likely support them in a reelection. That's clearly wrong. Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, it was overturned by the Supreme Court, but Section 4 is intact, one person, one vote, and you protect community of interest.
Mm-hmm.
There's a process you go through. That process was never validated where you have public input. I served recently on Arlington Retasking Disc Force where we did produce a map, and I was the representative for Arlington Branch NAACP. The
mm-hmm.
process was allowed for community input.
Mm-hmm.
The maps were produced online to give access to anybody who wanted to present a map.
Mm-hmm.
This had none of the feel or look of an open, transparent map-producing exercise. So
wow.
I think there were some problems with the vote itself, questionable. I think there was some problem with transparency with county precinct justices of peace coming together,
mm-hmm.
not asking for public input,
mm-hmm.
and that concerns me.
Mm-hmm.
And that map should have been that vote should have been postponed or delayed or tabled until we had more input, because we want to make sure that the people we govern trust us to do the right thing. And when you lose that trust, it's hard to get individuals to contribute to the decision-making that goes on at the county level. So I do believe the process was flawed.
But, you know, looking at the way I understand or I understood things to have gone down, how can one party draw up the map for everyone without everyone having an opinion? It just doesn't seem like that could even be possible, that the vote could have been without other people having the option to say yay, nay, take this out, do that, do the other. It just doesn't seem like that's even possible. And, you know, with being here in the city, where we're dealing with redistricting maps for the districts here for the city council, and watching the process versus watching the process for the JP and Constable redistricting, it's totally the opposite. So it doesn't even seem like there's fairness that took place in the way that it's being done. And I'm just amazed that the vote is standing. I am. I mean, and
I'm concerned about that process.
I'll put some input in. I'll give some input into that, too. So I was there at that commissioner's court meeting, and it was done dirty. I mean, just like the first redistricting they tried to do, you know, they tried to, you know, get their little weasel their way in there. The South Lake people tried to get their, you know, get more of their piece of the pie so they can, you know, get their – and honestly, it gets real dirty and deep, you know, to get one of – to get their favorite candidate pushed in. So that's why they did what they did. And you know, and Ombi was a part of that, Craig Ombi, and we have to know who our precinct chairs are. Now, Ombi is a precinct chair, but he was one of the driving forces behind that, along with Andy Wynn, who's running for commissioner court, too, unopposed. And so,
You know, so Ownby, who has a felony record, who's also a precinct chair and a consultant for tax evasion while he was helping campaign for two and consulting for two candidates and didn't report his deal. So he ended up doing 5 months federal prison along with 90 days of home confinement and 1 year of probation. But he's allowed to keep doing the things he's doing. But he was the one that was the driving force behind that. Well, you know, they did the map so dirty the first time that they pushed Commissioner Brooks all the way out of his district, which is illegal, like Mr. Sutton said. There's guidelines to this. And they pushed him out of his precinct. And they also took his was going to take his maintenance out of there. So you had two maintenances in precinct two. And so they killed that one when they figured out what was going on. They said, no, they voted against that. So guess what you do? You come back and you try to do it dirty with the Justice of Peace. Well, what happened with that was, I mean, it violated every Open Meeting Act you can think of. You know, they met behind closed doors. A few of the Justice of Peace then did that. You know, it was spearheaded by Charbonnet, who's a Justice of the Peace. And like Marvin Sutton said, that was self-preservation 100%. And so what they did
Not
was
Trevor.
that pushed a candidate out of one Justice of the Peace and into another race.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not so, an open meeting act you talked, Trevor, the open meetings act you talked about?
Yeah.
That wouldn't apply to the Justice of the Peace. They're not a governing body. They're judges. So the Open Meetings Act only applies to elected bodies who govern, who has the ability to tax property, and you have to have advance notice with an agenda prior to the meeting, and there are certain protocols that must be in play. And so you can't have a majority of the Commissioner's Court meeting outside of public view unless it's executive session. So they could do that as judges, so they wouldn't be in violation of the statute itself. But the way they did it, and not wanting input, but just being justice and applying the law, it basically is contradictory of what they're supposed to be doing.
Right. Well, I caught wind that one of the which I know which one it was. It was Commissioner Fix. I'll put him out there. He was frivolous to it. You know, it was kind of a meeting at a restaurant. You know, kind of one of those off to the sides that you know where they do their stuff. You know, which that's where it was. But going back to that, you're absolutely right, though. But going back to that, you know, the constables were pissed off because they didn't get any input on it. And so unanimously, every one of them asked to vote against it. They said, hey, we haven't had no chance to look at the map. We were told this morning, show up to Commissioner's Court, and that was how they found out. And it left a bad taste in their mouth. So every one of them said, you know, we want you to vote against it. Well, ultimately, you know, Devin Allen and Roy Brooks broke quorum, but they voted before that. If they would have broke quorum and not voted, then, you know, we could have had a different outcome. But now, you know, Devin Allen, along with some other attorneys, they're suing them behind that redistricting. But ultimately that led to precinct chairs having a lot more responsibilities or a lot less responsibilities. It screwed it up. I mean, you're right, Marvin. It's a cluster.
And to your point, Trevor, I think the question was that a valid vote, but affirmative to approve that measure? Was it a valid vote? Now, if they're still on the dais, they're still considered a quorum. Once they leave the dais, you don't have a quorum anymore, and the quorum is broke, and you can't cast a vote without a quorum. Uh-huh. So that was the question. I mean, it's a sticky issue, and it's almost like doing a replay of the tape to see – were they off the dais or were they still leaving the dais? And did Commissioner Brooke cast a vote in the affirmative knowing that he opposed it? And how did that vote show up and get recorded? And so there's a lot of issues with that. But at the end of the day, the process itself, the process was clearly flawed. There was no real input from the public.
I think that's wrong
when you do a disservice to the community you serve.
Yeah, you slap the community in the face completely. You're right.
I think I have a problem with the fact that Charbonnet, when I say Charbonnet for anybody who's not clear on that, Justice of the Peace, Jason Charbonnet, the fact that he was so involved in it and some kind of way benefited the most from it, and now he's going unopposed. So,
right.
I mean, that alone does not seem fair.
Now what I will say, Carrie, is even though they hold an elected position, they're still individuals. Individuals are allowed to present a map to the county commissioner's court. The county commissioner's court can accept or reject a map. In that case, as a commissioner and a county judge, my vote would be opposed to. It would be a no vote on the fact that because there was no clear intent to engage the public on the process. I wouldn't have problems with the judge's horse trading, but I want the public to play a major role in it and feel involved in how the precincts look and feel. That never took place, and that's where that process erred.
Wow. There's just so much to be saying.
It's true.
I think that we're in the middle of election season, and I think that absolutely everyone who had a role should be vetted for their role. And I think people should take that information into the ballot box with them and cast your vote accordingly. Because I think Dr. Phil's favorite statement he always says on his show is the best indicator of future behavior is past behavior. So if I can't trust you today, I can't trust you tomorrow. And I think people absolutely should think of that when they're voting this time. And I just wish there was something that the people can do to make this be in a position of being reversed. Is it even possible that the people can do anything to demand that this be reversed?
Carrie, I don't believe so, because the county commissioner's court is responsible for redistricting, the exercise of redistricting. That's within their preview. What I will say, to the point where we're talking about voting, and I've registered thousands of voters in Tarrant County, I hold the number one deputization, so I'm the first to be trained as a deputy registrar in the county. And when I register people, there are a couple of things I tell them. Where to go vote, locations, because we have voting centers now, when the elections take place. In some instances, you have five elections in 1 year. And the most important thing I leave them with is never, ever walk away from your vote. Even though you press the cast ballot button, that's not the end of the process. Stay engaged.
Amen.
Hold Marvin Sutton accountable. I want you to be critical of what I do. I want you to be engaged in what I do. I want you to contribute to the process. Never, ever walk away from your vote. And I use that example because I served on the Community Neighborhood Development Committee for the City of Arlington. We received approximately $5 million of HUD money that we distributed out and award to nonprofits to help us with homelessness, food insecurity. Some of that money went to Tarrant Area Food Bank. And so when I cast the vote to award a certain amount of dollars to that to help out food insecurity within Arlington, I make sure I'm out there distributing the food, putting it in trunks, and watching the faces of people because I want to set the example of staying connected with my vote. And I encourage every voter, stay engaged in the process, hold us accountable, because Trevor, you're right. When we're sleeping at the wheel, they're doing some outrageous stuff. And I'm sure they have good intentions and they just go sideways sometimes, but we all got to hold each other accountable.
Amen to that.
I agree. So, you know what? I'm just a guy. When I booked for this show, I really wasn't sure what I was going to get because I haven't really gotten deep into the candidates and their platforms and what to expect from the candidates. But I must say I am pleasantly surprised talking to both of you all because I really feel like this is any man's race. I mean, there may be some people who may have more financing than others, but I think we have two very smart candidates here on this phone line tonight who I'm very excited that are in the race because initially I was disappointed by some of the names that I saw in the race. I really was because I felt like, oh, here we go again. But the two of you give me hope. I mean, really, that there could be, you know, if you paid attention to the introduction music, it says a change is going to come. Maybe we'll get a change in this in these offices where we can have people that have some integrity and, you know, will represent with transparency and not be about the dollar, not be about the power, but be about service. So I just wanted to throw that out there tonight. When I booked for some of these shows sometime, y'all, I don't know what I'm going to get because I didn't do a pre-interview with either of you. And typically I do pre-interviews, but I haven't been feeling well. And I didn't do a pre-interview with either of you all, but I am pleasantly surprised at how much knowledge you all have about the position and how eager both of you all seem to serve, to be, you know, ready to serve. That said, how can people give to your campaigns and how can they volunteer for your campaign? Either of you can start.
Trevor, did you want to take it?
Marvin, go. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Trevor. I certainly appreciate it. So I'm running a really, really ultra-conservative campaign.
This is Marvin.
We're raised. We've got a. Did I go to?
Your voices sound similar, so tell them who you are.
Okay, this is Marvin. So it's with the Marvin Sutton campaign, and we're running a really slim, lean campaign. We refurbished signs from previous campaigns, so we didn't have to spend a lot more money and put signs in the landfill. I believe, as an individual, voters need to feel connected with their candidate. You don't get the same feel with a canvasser. You don't get the same feel with the mailer. And I do adhere to COVID protocols, but I believe you need to see and understand and look in a person's eyes and feel the passion they have for the office they're running for. Mm-hmm. I alone cannot make the best decisions that's going to benefit the county. Mm-hmm. I need your help. I need your help with this campaign. I need your help with the ideas to improve the quality of life. I want you to know I have a passion to serve, but I need your help. I need your help in volunteering. I need donations. My website is electmarvinsutton.com. I will spend your money wisely. I need and value your support. I need and value your ideas. Now, we may never agree on everything, but what we will agree on is we want what's best for our community. And Trevor will agree with me. We all want what's best for our community.
Amen.
And so I ask for your prayers. I mm-hmm. ask for your support. My name is Marvin Sutton, and my cell number, which I will give out personal cell number, I will answer the phone. I'm retired. My personal cell number is 817-602-0644. If you're ever feeling down and you feel you just can't bear your burdens, give me a call. I promise I will listen. I will mm-hmm. offer advice. I will help you get through the best I can. But I want to be a resource not only for individuals but for our county. County government alone can't solve all the problems. We need to build alliances. We need faith-based organizations. We need nonprofits to help us address a lot of the issues that go on in counties and major urban centers. I want to be your voice of reason. I want to advocate for our seniors. I want to advocate for our working-class families, our business, our veterans, and our students. I want to be the humble servant that speaks truth to power. So my name is Marvin Sutton. My cell number is 817-602-0644. I want to be part of this movement, part of improving the quality of life, building trust, and reconnecting our community.
Okay. Trevor?
Yes, ma'am. Well, my name is Robert Trevor Bucher, and I'm running for Tarrant County Judge, as you know. And so, I mean, basically, you know, I'm like Marvin. I'm running conservative campaign. I mean, everything I'm doing is out of pocket. I've gotten very minimal donations, but I've been grateful for what I've gotten. I've used it, you know, as wisely as I can. The only thing I'm asking for is, you know, prayers as well, along with, you know, any kind of block walking help, any door knocking help, you know, sharing out posts and all that. And also, you know, I'm just mainly, I can feed myself and I can gas myself. I can put all the gas in my own vehicle. You know, I don't need to ask for that. but I do need help with signs and with leaflets to continue on, you know, door knocking. I'm like Marvin, you know, I'm the same way. You know, I don't think you get the very essence of the candidate, you know, when you send out mailers. I just don't, you just don't get that connection. And so, you know, that's where I'm at with it, and I need all the help I can get. Poll watchers are important. You know, people standing at polls and handing out your leaflets to people walking by, not chasing them down and running them down, but, you know, just respectfully if they come up and ask you and kind of give the informative. And so how you can donate to the campaign or how you can reach me is my campaign site is voterobertbucherfortarrantcountyjudge.com, and it'll take you to my Facebook page as well and my Gab and my Twitter and my Instagram as well as Telegram. I mean, I'm all over the place in socials, and then I'll take you to my donations as well. And if you just need to reach out to me, because I'm a pretty open book. I run my own campaign. I'm the manager, the everything outside of the socials. My girlfriend runs the socials. So you can reach me at 903-802-8040, and that's how you can reach me.
Okay, y'all. You know, listen, y'all, campaigning ain't easy. I have been involved in a couple campaigns, and I know it's not easy work, and you're putting yourself out there. They're giving y'all their cell numbers, and they're saying, call me, talk to me if you have a question or a comment. I'm listening. One Democrat, Mr. Sutton is a Democrat, and Mr. Booker is a Republican. I wanted to show balance tonight. I'm not telling you who to vote for, but I'm telling you, you got two good candidates right here in front of you. Listen, y'all, I'm going to tell y'all some of the things that these guys will be overseeing or be part of. Boards and commissions currently appointed, at least in part, by the commissioner's court are these. And listen, the list is long. The Bail Bonds Board, Building Line Adjustment Board, Child Protective Services Board, Citizens Blue Ribbon Committee, Cultural Educational Facilities Finance Corporation, Emergency Services District Number 1, Health Facilities Development Corporation, Historical Commission, Hospital District Board of Managers, Housing Finance Corporation, Human Services Advisory Committee, Industrial Development Corporation, Law Library Advisory Committee, MHMR of Tarrant County Board of Trustees, North Texas Tollway Authority, Sexually Oriented Business Permit and License Review Board, Sheriff's Department Civil Service Commission, Tarrant County Civil Service Commission, Transportation Bond Project Evaluation Committee, Trinity Metro Board of Directors, Workforce Development Board, 911 Emergency Assistance District Board, and I didn't even mention them all. So that gives you an idea of the weight of this position in our commissioner's court. So we really need to be very smart and do our research for who we're putting in these seats, because while we're sleeping, they're making decisions over, it seems like, everything about our lives. And I noticed that the Tarrant County commissioners do a five-year plan, and I think the one that I saw for that was drafted in 2014, the vision said, and I quote, our vision is to be financially responsible with county resources and efficient in service delivery. We commit to a culture of innovation, excellence, and transparency while providing the highest level of customer service to Tarrant County residents and businesses. Did they follow their own vision plan that was drafted in 2014? Have they, are they currently following their own vision?
Oh, no. No, definitely not.
I'm just saying. And, y'all, that's online. And I was surprised when I read the vision, and I thought, wow, they actually drafted that and said that that was their vision for Tarrant County. And have
in Terry, most municipalities do draft a vision, but I think they fell a little bit short on some of those goals, and you're going to have to bring somebody in to kind of clean up a little bit. I think their intention was good. Somewhere along the way, you just lose focus. And it helps when you bring in a fresh set of eyes. Would you agree, Trevor? A fresh set of eyes with fresh ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's a given. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, I noticed that J.D. Johnson has been in his seat for 36 years. That's just way too long. That's just way too long.
Right. And if you look at Saginaw. Let's use Saginaw, for example, with J.D. Johnson. Well, how much has changed there? I mean, change is good in moderation or in a wave, in a flow.
Mm-hmm.
But to have zero change, I mean, the newest thing they just got was the Raising Cane's and the Chick-fil-A. You know, now they got that bridge, which was engineered designed disastrously. It's not going to help anything. It's actually going to make things worse. Oh, that bridge over the railroad. Ooh, my God. That is a disaster. And everybody in Saginaw is like, this is a disaster.
And I don't want anybody to walk away from this show and say all they talked about was negative stuff. No. What I'm doing is talking about the position itself. And this is just history about the position and the county commissioner's court. So it's not a bashing. It's just information, because I think without being properly informed, then we go to the polls and we make the wrong decision. Don't y'all agree with that?
Yeah. And to your point, Kerry, you know, the county has done, I think, me personally, and having to deal and governing during a pandemic, they kind of have taken a good, robust approach to disseminating information about resources for COVID hardship, locations for testing. They've done great and been really good at that. I think we need to have a better method of surveillance and contact tracing. We got to pull this whole thing together, but the county have really stepped up with what resources we did get to try to allocate out and help cities that were struggling in those areas who had a high COVID spread rate. So the county have stepped up in some instances, but at the end of the day, I want to congratulate the commissioner of court who do their job day in and day out and do the best job they can. I think it's admirable. I do think that we want to focus on where we're weak and where we can improve, because we all want to improve, whether it's personal or professional or in the political arena. We all want to improve what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And so I just don't want to come off and, you know, the show was very negative. No, the show was informative. So I learned a lot in the researching of this show, because I was so surprised at some of the things that I discovered, the salaries, the vision, the terms that some of the people had been. I mean, I don't even know how many terms is 36 years. I mean, obviously this person is going. How many?
That's quite a few.
It's a 4-year term for the office, Kerry. So it's nine terms.
That's too many.
Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, he's
been in that office as long as I've been alive.
You know what I'm saying? It's just really too long, and I think we really got to do something about term limits, because I think what happens is you put too much power in one position. You know, somebody who is in a position that long that's just way too much power being seated in one position. I'm just going to say that. And I don't know Mr. Johnson, but I really want to research his voting record now that I found out he's been seated for 36 years. But we also know that there's a lot changing on the commissioner's court, because we know Roy Brooks is retiring. We know J.D. Johnson is retiring. And we know Judge Whitley is retiring. How do you all feel that's going to affect the commissioner's court?
Kerry, did you mean Devin Allen?
When did Roy Brooks announce he's retiring?
Yeah, Devin Allen is who you meant, right?
Wait a minute, I'm sorry. Okay, I understood that J.D. Johnson is retiring. Judge Whitley is not returning, right?
Right,
Roy Brooks.
Devin Allen
is not retiring. Yeah.
Okay, I understand Roy Brooks is not returning.
I hadn't heard that.
I haven't heard that one.
I hadn't heard that. I think Devin Allen is not returning. She's in Commissioner
Precinct. She is stepping down. Yeah, which makes Andy Wynn running unopposed.
I have been hearing all over the internet that Roy Brooks is not returning.
Oh, dang.
Nobody knows. Okay, I don't.
I hadn't heard that.
Let me hear. Okay. So you heard Ms. Allen is not returning.
No, she made a public statement.
She made that very clear. She's not seeking re-election.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me Google this real quick because I promise I have heard more than like five times that Roy Brooks was not going to seek re-election. So I'm just concerned, like, why y'all didn't know that? Or why y'all...
Yeah, I hadn't heard that.
Wow. Okay, y'all, I'm not making this up. I'm Googling it now. Commissioner Roy Brooks will not be seeking re-election. Are you serious? Okay, there it goes. I'm going to look it up, y'all. I promise I've heard this repeatedly. And I think it was even mentioned this week with the show that I did with Ms. Lyons that Roy Brooks was not going to be returning. But you all have not heard that.
I have not heard that.
I gotta go back and find out where I've seen it and heard it multiple times. I will keep looking while we're doing the show. But yeah, I understood. That's what I understood was the shift was going to be in power that Whitley, J.D. Johnson, and Roy Brooks were not returning. But if you're saying Ms. Allen is not returning, that will be four seats, right?
Right. Because I think the commissioners, too, are on different election cycles.
Oh.
So you would still have some continuity and experience on the court.
Okay.
So Devin would be up for re-election, and she decided she wasn't going to seek re-election.
Okay, let me go to Roy Brooks this day. Okay. That's very interesting. So would he be up for election if he was running this time?
Next year.
I don't think he's up for re-election.
Okay,
I think they take two commissioners and run them in the same election cycle, so you have two that are still in office that have some tenure and experience.
Oh, makes sense. Absolutely makes sense.
The judge goes with, I believe, 2 and 4. Correct me if I'm wrong, Trevor. The judge goes with 2 and 4 on the even number year and odd number year. I'm sorry. Yeah, on the even number year. No, they all go on the even number year, obviously. But the judge go with the 2 and 4 cycle, and then the 1 and 3 cycle is a separate cycle.
Yeah,
okay.
That's true. That's right.
Okay. I think it was said this week when I interviewed Khaleesia Lyons that this was that Roy Brooks was not seeking reelection. So FYI, so that would be 4 seats if that's the case, correct?
And that would be in 2024.
He won't be unless that's what they're losing. So he would file
next year and then go into the 2024 election, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Right.
Okay. Wow. Okay, so as it stands today, then you're saying the shift would be Whitley, J.D. Johnson, and Allen.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am, currently.
Wow. So that would be one Democrat, 2 Republicans.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
That's correct.
Very interesting. I think maybe sometimes, kind of like what happened downtown Fort Worth, you know, when everybody starts seeing this last election cycle that they were going to flip downtown and pretty much downtown was split. Do you think that needs to happen with the commissioner's court? Maybe it just needs a total overhaul, a flip where you just get new ideas, fresh people, so that there would be some more transparency and some other things to get done in the commissioner's court?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, you got what, J.D. Johnson's got 36, and you add Whitley's 11, plus the time he was a commissioner, and then Devin's got 2. So, I mean, that's a lot of years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What were you saying, Marvin?
I would like to see the will of the voters prevail. Whether it's they want to flip the seats or they want new ideas and experience, because the voters should be in charge in the driving seat. All the powers derived from that commissioner's court are vested by the voters. And so I'd like to see the will of the voters. I'd like to influence that will somehow. But, yes, I would like to see and respect the will of the voters in that case. And I'd like to see some fresh ideas on that commissioner's court, some innovation. And so I'm looking forward to this race. I welcome the engagement of the other candidates. I welcome candidate forums as we move forward. But at the end of the day, I want to make sure that we protect the integrity of our communities and we improve the quality of life of our voters and our citizens and taxpayers.
I agree.
Amen.
I think with the way the new redistricting maps were done, I think it absolutely speaks that the will of the people was not put, you know, first. And so I think that speaks to it needs to be a shift, you know, because whenever the people are not put in the forefront of all decisions that are being made, because if you're making decisions based on racial lines and party lines and to determine or predetermine the outcome, you know, so that, you know, you're unopposed, that's just tacky. I mean, it is, and I don't know Mr. Charbonnet, but if he did that, I really pray that an independent gets on the ticket and at least gives him some type of a run. I just think to leave him unopposed is just the craziest thing.
Yes, I agree. That's normally the case,
Carrie, where you do have a third party comes in the November mm-hmm. election, so you're probably more apt to see that than not. Mm-hmm.
Good. Yeah, I think it would be just the worst thing in the world for him to just completely benefit and just be unopposed. I don't even get that.
And he has your opportunity, Carrie, to file as a third party candidate for county commission. Justice of the Peace.
If I was in that precinct, I would.
My apologies, then.
No, that's okay. Trust me, I thought about it.
If you know somebody in that precinct, then you can jump on that.
You know what I think should happen, if the truth be told? I think Khaleesia Lyons, some kind of way, should be put back in that district, and she should be allowed to run. I think it was very clear that she was running, even though there was some conversation, you know, about the fact that it was not known, but I definitely believe that it was known that she was running. She was gathering signatures, and I believe Mr. Charbonnet absolutely knew that. And so I think
– Right, he pushed her out into a different race, yeah.
Yeah.
What I will say is the company they hired to draw the map for the Justice of the Peace was a company called Murphy Notchy Associates. They do campaigns and conduct campaigns or consultants for most municipal campaigns in the north central Texas area. So they knew, they had to know who's in what district when they drew those maps. I just don't believe they just blindly drew maps and followed natural boundaries and community of interest. So that particular consultant normally engaged in the political process. So they know and run campaigns. And I don't know who runs that Justice of the Peace campaign, but I would love to go to look at the finance report to see if any expenditures was paid to Murphy Nasia.
I think I understood
because they're not cheap, and they have been involved in a lot of local elections, and there has been plenty of candidates that inside Tarrant County that has used them before, so they know very well.
Wow.
I want to see it as well.
Trevor, I know personally because I ran a campaign against one of their candidates, and so yes, they do run campaigns in this area here, and so for them to prepare a map with not knowing who they know. They got data just like everybody else, and I think it's unfortunate that the county commissioners adopted that map.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's sickening because, you know, we all want a fair race, and we all want, you know, integrity in this, like you've stated before, Mr. Sutton. I mean, we want it no matter which side it's on. We want integrity, and believe me, I know Mr. Charbonnet's a Republican, and I'm disgusted. as a Republican on how that went down. You know, and that's not what we should be representing, whether, you know, because we represent the people, like, you know, like you stated before, too, because that's the people we represent, and that's a slap in the face to our community.
It is.
I agree. Y'all, listen, we're down to the last 15 minutes in our show, so I'm going to ask each of you to take the next 3 to 5 minutes and basically address Tarrant County voters and tell them why they should vote for you. We're going to start with you, Mr. Sutton.
Oh, okay, you're going to put me on the hot seat again, huh? No, but thank you so much. And certainly, it's been a pleasure joining you and the viewers, listeners. I'm Marvin Sutton again. I've served since age 17. I've served my country honorably for 8 years. I secured nuclear weapons for the Air Force, became an air traffic controller the last 4 years. I served for 30 years securing our friendly skies and ensuring the safety of flight for all passengers that fly through North Central Texas, especially in the DFW airport area. I've served on Arlington City Council. I served during the pandemic. I served when we were forecasted a $20 million budget shortfall where we had to go back and revisit our budget because municipalities can't run a deficit. So ends have to meet, but we still got to deliver those critical services, police and fire. And so we were able to do that. We were able to go back and revise our budget, and we went back and looked at the revenue shortfall from the sports venues that we got because we weren't fully utilizing those because of COVID. But we were able to realize a $6 million surplus. So we were a real conservative city. So I understand what it takes to run a municipality. I understand what it takes to govern. But what I try to do is connect with our citizens. I try to address the needs. I try to set the example. I'm the person you're looking for to run Tarrant County Judge Office day one with integrity. I have the experience, so I'll run it at the highest level of competency. I've made decisions as an air traffic controller with real data, so you can trust me at the ham. When I'm taking care of thousands of passengers, you can trust me in that office. I've served the country with honor, so you know I'm going to bring honor and dignity to that office. But I'm a listener, and I want you to know I will listen. I alone cannot fix the issues in Tarrant County. I need help of the voters, taxpayers, business, faith-based organizations, nonprofits, all hands on deck. We're going to do this thing together. We're going to build trust. We're going to reconnect with our communities. And at the end of the day, I want to elevate the experience that you have with your elected officials. I want you to know that you can trust Marvin Sutton. I want you to know that Marvin Sutton is not perfect, but my goal is to improve the quality of life for our entire county, to provide access and opportunity to jobs, contracts, and grants. And at the end of the day, my goal is to serve you, the voter.
Give them your website.
My website is electmarvinsutton.com. My cell number is 817-602-0644, and I want to be a resource to you. I want to be a resource to our community. I want to be a resource to our county.
Do you want to give them an email address?
My email address is contact@electmarvinsutton.com. That's contact@electmarvinsutton.com.
All right, y'all. Listen, that was Mr. Marvin Sutton, the Democrat that's running for Tarrant County Judge. Okay, Mr. Trevor, we're ready to hear your closing statement and why the Tarrant County voters should vote for you.
Okay, well, again, I'm Robert Trevor Buchan, running for Tarrant County Judge. I'm on the Republican Party ticket. I'm the first one that you'll see on the ballot. I drew number one. Pretty much I bring 10 years of corrections to the table, so I know we need a lot of judicial reform, and that, you know, right now our hot spots is the jail and also the family court system. There is a lot of disarray going on right now. There's a lot of illegal stuff, and money problems going there, especially when they get money that is given to them federally and from the state per kid that they remove from the household.
You know, we need a lot of reform in that area. And I'm the guy that knows about what's going on with the Title IV funding. And also, you know, I'm the only candidate that's on the Republican ticket that has gone up against the ISDs, the you know, for not following the 504 protocols, and the, which it happens to be a federal program that every kid is entitled to and has to be followed and not optional. I'm also the only candidate that has went up against a Tarrant County Commissioner's Court all year long and even currently, and watches the budget, looks at the audit, and sees where the overspending is, where the backdoor deals are happening, the quid pro quos, the Open Meetings Act violations, because I've heard that there is quite a few backdoor meetings that are supposed to be minted and they're not done. So I aim to come clean it up in the fiscal responsibility part. I know where all the money is going that's not supposed to go. I know where we need to scale back without losing people's jobs, but also I know where we need to be more frugal. And that's where I step in. And so, I mean, I serve alongside the people, and I've done it, you know, since day one. I've campaigned. I've been on the ground, boots on the ground, knocking on doors, educating people on voting. And I've actually raised up a couple candidates while I'm campaigning, which is, you know, kind of exciting for me because, you know, now we have more people stepping up that are grassroots and conservative, and that's exactly where I'm at. I'm grassroots conservative. The establishment doesn't want me. I don't want them. The Republicans honestly don't want me in there because I aim to clean up the infrastructure, and I don't want them either. I'm in the middle. I'm about as rogue Republican as you can get, and I know I'll have to work with both sides. And you know, and that's something that people got to understand, that there is you know, no, you know, stalemating, because the people lose when you stalemate. You're going to have to find a happy medium without bending at the knee or flexing at the back.
Give them your website.
And my website is voterobertbucherfortarrantcountyjudge.com. And on Twitter, it's Robert T. Bucher. On Gab, it's Robert Trevor Bucher for Tarrant County Judge. On Facebook, it's Robert Trevor Bucher for Tarrant County Judge. On Telegram, it's Robert Trevor Bucher for Tarrant County Judge. And so on and so on. You know, it's all pretty much the same across the socials. And my phone number you can reach me at is 903-802-8040. And, I mean, I do respond.
You have an email address?
And my email address is thearmor@ymail.com. That's thearmor@ymail.com. So thearmor.
Wow. Y'all listen. You know, if I was at a church right now, I'd have the collection basket out telling y'all to give to these campaigns. Because I really think some of the others, you know, may have a whole lot of money, like we talked about, one guy getting $250 to run for county commissioner. These guys don't have that kind of money, but I believe they definitely would be good choices at the ballot box. You know, like one's Democrat, one's Republican. So, you know, there's some choices here. So tonight, I'm going to tell you to get your envelopes, fill them out, and send them a contribution for their campaign. I'm just saying, y'all. I'd like to thank both Mr. Marvin Sutton and Trevor Bucher for being with me tonight. It has been a pleasure. You know, when the third party backed out, I didn't know what was going to happen because I planned for three people, but I've learned in doing talks since 2010, the way it happens is the way it's supposed to happen. And I think with one person backing out, it gave us more time to focus on these two, and I learned a lot, and I think I found myself very informed, and I'm sure you were as well. A reminder, y'all, we are here each and every Friday night now from 7 to 9 p.m. Sometimes we will be going out of rotation to do individual interviews with some of the candidates because it's only so many shows you can do on a Friday night. So I will do some interviews, I said, out of rotation, so keep that in mind. A reminder, you can advertise right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. If you want to run a campaign ad or advertise your business, send me an email at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. That's letstalkfortworth@aol.com. You can also support if you'd like to donate. Our Cash App is paypal.me and Let's Talk Fort Worth. Next Friday, y'all, again, we're going to be here from 7 to 9 p.m., and we're going to be talking about the new absentee voter laws. Things have changed, y'all. Don't be fooled. Don't let anybody steal your vote. No one can cast your ballot for you anymore. And on the top of that application, you have to put your driver's license or Social Security number, and that's not information that you would want to give out to just anybody. So, again, the voter laws have changed as far as absentee voter ballots are concerned. So do not let anybody get you to sign a blank application and tell you they're going to mail it in for you, because the rules have absolutely changed. And we're going to talk about that next Friday night in depth so that you know how not to be fooled out of your vote this come election. March 1st, is it? March 1st is when we vote again. Y'all, let me get my dates right. Early voting starts February 14th, and it runs through the 25th. Election day is March 1st. And also, y'all, listen, if you're going to register to vote and you are not registered, you must do so by January 21st. To request a ballot by mail, that's a tongue twister, you must do so by February 18th. Again, early voting is February 14th through the 25th, and election day is May 1st. These guys have told you all they need some help with their campaigns. If you'd like to work their campaigns, they've given you their information. If you did not catch it, replay the tape, and you will be able to hear it. So listen, y'all, I gave it all I had tonight, not even feeling well, but I'm so glad that I showed up because I really enjoyed the show tonight, and I hope you did as well. Until next Friday, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you. Thank you again. And good luck, Mr. Marvin. Good luck.
Thanks. Good luck to you as well, Trevor. Take care now.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Bye-bye.